What do you want to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
Welcome you into episode 11 of Meet Me at Mutual. I'm your host, Daniel Shopdog. You'll find me at C70. Got John Nagel, a back to school John Nagel, with us from Cardinals Farm. John, how has your first week back been?
It's not been too bad. Our students start on Monday, so we had open house, got to meet the kids today, so I think it's going to be a good year. I'm excited about it.
Well, good. And hopefully you can be more excited about that than, well, at least some people are about the Cardinals right now. And that's a low bar to clear. But before we get into all that, and we've got some stuff we want to talk about tonight, of course, but let's just go ahead and get started with the Redbird Rewind.
McCarver, the first one. Now his infielders all over him. A new world's record of 17 strikeouts in one game.
All right, last week we went through the first game of the Marlins series when the Cardinals had beaten Jose Fernandez and had won 3 out of 4, and things were looking fine and dandy. They continued that little bit of a run by beating the Marlins the next night in a little bit closer game. Well, no, it wasn't a closer game. It was an 11-6 game. They kind of got out of hand late. One of those games, I think, if I'm remembering right, Cardinals got a lead and then tried to give it all back. Then the Saturday game with the whole Jaime Garcia starting on third, 3 days rest thing that did not work out well. Lost 11-0. Then they lose a Carlos Martinez start to the Marlins in the bottom of the ninth when no outfielder can call for a ball.
Right, and that was the Bowman over O.
Yeah.
Right, with the tie. Yeah.
And I mean, I know a lot of people say you got to take your closer there, and I get that. And maybe that's probably true, but that's not Bowman's fault in that one.
Right,
mean, you know, he got two outs, he put a runner, he gave up a hit, and then he hit a fly ball that, in reasonable times, is caught and we're going to extra innings. I think a lot of people wanted to put some blame on Bowman there, but I just don't think it's fair.
Right. Yeah. And the whole, you know, there was you know, blame put on Bowman. There's blame put on Matheny for going to Bowman, and you know, he can't control the outfielders not communicating out there. And you know, he's been solid. Matt Bowman, I tweeted out, I don't know, since maybe June 1st or July 1st, his ERA is under 2, a tad under 2. I mean, he's been solid. I can't fault him. I can't fault Matheny for putting him out there, or obviously Bowman for what happened.
My feeling is Matheny was planning for extras right there, you know, so he could put Bowman out there for a couple of innings. And it's always dangerous to plan for an extra innings there, but you know, if he gets through the ninth, he may actually pitch the 10th, and unless they take a lead, then you've got O. You know, again, there is that idea that you put your closer in and get it locked down, especially since O hadn't probably pitched in a couple of days. He probably hadn't pitched since the first game of that series. But, yeah, like you say, I can't really fault Matheny too much for that one. Matheny's got his own problems, so
especially the next night, the first game against the Reds. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Then we get into the Red series, and the first game it's been kind of hashed around a lot on Twitter and things, but quickly, Matheny does three double switches, removes in order the fifth hitter, the third hitter, the fourth hitter, and all that juggling around means that Sung Wong Oh, who came in the eighth, in a fabulous spot. I mean, as much as Matheny got ripped in that game, for him to bring O in the eighth with the bases loaded, nobody out, that's not something I would have seen out of Matheny even last year, I don't think.
Right, and I agree, but I think his hand was kind of forced a little bit there by the ineffectiveness of Duke and then Broxton. I mean, yeah, you know, he made some bad moves there for sure, but when you have two relief pitchers who can't, when you have a starter who goes five innings, mm-hmm. and then you have two relief pitchers who can't throw strikes, you're going to be forced into situations like that. And you know, I think he got a little happy with the double switches, and you know, I don't know. I mean, second guessing for sure. We're doing that, but I don't know what you do differently if you let Duke face Billy Hamilton to try and get out of the six. But he's not throwing strikes. I don't know. Yeah. It was a tough one.
Yeah, it was, and I mean, but you know, he had Maness warming up at the same time. I think most years he would have brought Maness in there in the eighth.
Yeah.
And that might have worked. Maness has pitched much better since he came off the disabled list. That might have worked. It might have worked to let Maness pitch the ninth inning, although there were some big bats coming up.
Right.
And the problem was, the biggest problem was the fact that Tyler Lyons went on the DL after this game. We did not realize in all this that he had a knee issue that precluded him from starting that Saturday game and put him out of reach for this game. And there's an illness going through the bullpen.
There's a few.
Yeah, let's there's so many ways to take that. But and so he was a little bit limited on who he could use. But they're they're using an 8-man staff or an 8-man bullpen, and so there's only four guys on the bench.
Yep.
If you're pitch hitting for O, you're hitting for with him with Rosario.
Yeah.
And that's a step up, but not a huge one.
Right. And then, you know, kind of going back to the Tyler Lyons thing, you know, I thought I read or heard something that Dean Kiekhaefer stayed with the team, kind of anticipating that. And it just kind of makes you wonder if they're anticipating, why did they not, just go with it? That way you didn't lose an arm. But you're right. I think having that short bench and all those double switches kind of put, kind of tied his hands a little bit.
Yeah, I think it did. And obviously now, again, 9 times out of 10, probably O goes out there and pitches 2 perfect innings, and we're not talking about it too much. But this was the 10th time, and it did not work out well.
Or he gives up the runs in the 8th. I mean, he worked out of a bases loaded, nobody out jam. So, yeah.
Yeah, he could have easily given up one run. I mean, if he gives a double play ball, he could have easily given up a run.
Right.
We'd have said, okay, well, it's tied, and we'll go on. The problem was that, two solid singles in the ninth, and then a big long home run. That's a tough one to swallow. But the closers have that, and again, it's a game that was probably mismanaged. But I think if you look at a lot of those decisions on the face of it, that kind of looked at them at the blog the next day, you could understand them in individual, but when you put them all together, it made a mess.
And again, you had 3 pitchers who were ineffective. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you have 3 pitchers ineffective in one game, it's going to be hard to win.
Yeah, yeah, especially. And like you say, if Adam Wainwright even goes 6 innings, that may be a different story. Cardinals come back the next night, win 5-4. That was a game that, they got 4 runs in the first and then just kind of shut down. I've seen games like that in the past. We kind of forget, Sechrist comes in, and he was a little bit ineffective as well against the Reds on the Tuesday night. Comes in on Wednesday night and puts a runner on. I think there's a runner on second, and that Schubler, who seemed to destroy us all series long,
either
in the infield or in the outfield or at the bat, ripped a foul ball that would have easily tied the game if that ball had been about another foot or two the other way, and maybe that game goes differently. It was foul, and Seekers come back and strike him out, so I don't think it got the attention that it deserved. But it was a little bit of a heartbreaking, or heart-rending, for the fact that you start out 4-0 before the Reds even get to bat.
Right, and then it's another, another start where your starter goes 5 innings. I mean, that's when you keep building those, you're just wearing down the bullpen. They did a pretty solid job, maybe outside of Matt Bowman, in that one.
Yeah, Bowman did struggle a little bit there, but seemed to work around it somewhat. And then there's today's game, which, boy, there's nothing you can say good about today's game. Mike Leake, as you say, only goes 5. I think he started the 6th, but he didn't get anybody out. He was not very effective at all, and the Cardinals had... Well, they got about as many hits off the starting pitcher after the game as they did during the game. As they were going to the plane, the leadoff error was changed to a hit because, you know, for a while there, that was the only, would have been the only hit. They had a, you know, there was that threat of a no-hitter for a little while. It just, I mean, you know getaway games and you know that, but you can't, a team like this just really can't be dropping two out of three to a Reds team that has played better of late, but still is not a good team.
No, they're not, and you're right. Again, this is the time that we've talked about this last week, where you had the tough series against the Mets and the Marlins, and then you kind of opened up a little bit, with the Reds and then the Braves, and it's not off to a good start.
No, it's not, and we'll get into a little bit more of that here in the next segment of what this means for this team, but it's just been a, for the fact that somebody pointed out, we keep having these statement games like they had against the Dodgers or they had against the Mets or whatever, and then those statement games just don't linger very long.
No, they don't.
And so it's a little bit frustrating. We talk about the moves of the week. You had Brandon Moss come back on Tuesday. You had Johnny Peralta come back on Tuesday. The Peralta news tempered, of course, by the fact that Alamedes Diaz is on the DL with a broken hand because Andrew Cashner apparently doesn't understand the Cardinal way or something of that nature. We'll talk about that in a minute. But Diaz going down, though, on a hairline fracture, it's obviously at least 2 weeks. It's probably going to be more like a month or more. That's a tough blow. Even when you're getting guys like Moss and Peralta back, to lose a guy like Diaz is just tough to swallow.
Yeah, and Matt Carpenter's missed some time. So, I mean, it wouldn't be out of the realm to say that Diaz has been the MVP this season, I think, been the most consistent performer. And you're right. I mean, when you lose, someone like that who's been pretty consistent, it's a big blow. And getting Carpenter back, tomorrow? Is he going back tomorrow?
Is that right?
So, that'll be good. But, I feel like more of our issues are with the pitching, and I'm sure we'll get into that in a little bit, but definitely big blow losing Diaz.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, we've kind of got adjusted to that, and it's a big position. I mean, now you've got Peralta playing short where he hasn't played this year, and that's not a big deal. I mean, he can slide over to that well as also, he's going to probably provide a solid and consistent defense there, maybe make fewer errors than Diaz, although I don't know if he'll get to as many balls. But then, does that mean Carpenter moves back to third? Does that mean we're going to see more of Wong at second base? What does that mean overall? It's like you just feel like you were that close to putting it all together offensively, and then you get another blow. It's just don't get a chance to put the final piece together.
And I think it's interesting, like you just said, you're going to have Peralta at short and probably, for the most part, I would think, Matt Carpenter at third, which, beginning of season, that's where they would have started. But, as things went along, it kind of worked out. I'm not going to say he worked out deals, but, it kind of worked with Johnny Peralta, hey, you're going to play third. And then Matt Carpenter, hey, you okay playing second? Yeah, as long as you don't keep switching me back and forth. And now these guys are going back to their original spots, and you just have to wonder if it's going to do anything to this, defense. If it's going to not, I don't know if it could be much worse, but it's obviously not going to help.
Yeah, I mean, as somebody pointed out on Twitter today, that's one of the things that maybe has lended itself to the problems this year is that everybody continues to move around and they're not settled in one position. If you have a different mindset when you're playing third versus when you're playing second versus when you're playing the outfield. So maybe that's been part of the deal. I don't think it's all of it, but that may have some of the factor in the errors is just that people, they're not playing out of position because they can play the positions. It's just that they're not quite adjusted to those positions.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And, I heard an interview with John Mozeliak this morning with Tim McKernan, and he talked about he's wondering if, they had too much flexibility and too much kind of depth a little bit. And, you don't have guys set in these positions. And it's something interesting to think about, especially when you have the general manager questioning it.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people thought that might – be some sort of indictment on the manager
because giving him
all these tools and he's not maybe using them the way that they should have been used. I don't know. I think the people, there are people that are going to look for anything from Mike Matheny, but there's a lot that's, you know, fair game, and I think that is. I don't know that that's what Mo meant, and I think you're kind of like what we're saying. If you have a guy that plays first base and he knows he's going to play first base every day, that somewhat has a soothing effect on things. But, you know, then again, flexibility is an important thing and is a good thing. So balancing that is something that maybe Mo has never had to really think about.
Right. I don't know if you heard that interview, but, you know, it was really interesting. He was kind of really candid about the struggles of this team. And you know, you made the point about, you know, maybe he's kind of putting, you know, I don't know, putting a little bit of that on Matheny. And he also talked about the struggles, this team struggles, like with getting runners, you know, thrown out on the bases and just kind of fundamentals. And, you know, I thought that was a little bit, he was putting that a little bit on Matheny too. I thought that was interesting, just kind of how open he was about the struggles.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to listen to it. I know somebody sent me the link to it, and I wasn't able to get it to work at work. But yeah, I think, and I mean, if you're talking about base running and things like that, I mean, some of that has to fall back on the defense,
sure.
especially
yeah.
on the manager, especially yeah. when at the beginning of the year he's talking about how aggressive he wanted them to be on the base paths, and they're fine and dandy aggressive.
But a little too much.
Yeah, that's the problem. Yeah. Is, you know, we saw that in the game on Wednesday night. Two guys thrown out at home from third, between third and home. Holiday thrown out at second trying to score or trying to stretch a single to a double. There are times and places for that. And I just don't, I think that they've kind of got that full throttle mentality. And sometimes that works. Sometimes you force the error. Sometimes they throw the ball away. But a lot of times, you know, these are professionals. They're going to make the plays.
Right.
And we're seeing the problems with that.
And, you wonder if you have base coaches who are, you know, kind of coaching out of position a little bit. I wonder, you know, how much that plays into it. Probably not that much, but it's just something to think about.
That's fair. I mean, you're right, because you normally, I mean, you've got your first base coach at third base, and you've got a guy that was the bench coach that moved to first base. So, I think that's fair to think that that's part of it. And again, some of these guys are just taking off and they're doing, especially a Matt Holiday. Matt Holiday's not Matt Holiday's going to run when he wants to run.
Right.
And one of the few flaws in Matt Carpenter's game is he's not very. He's a very aggressive base runner. He's not necessarily a very smart base runner.
Right.
And maybe that's what it boils down to. There's just not, as somebody pointed out today on Twitter, there's a lack of baseball IQ, and maybe that's part of it. I don't know. There's flaws all the way around, but trying to figure them out is somewhat a little bit more difficult, which, again, made Mo's situation a little difficult, which we should probably talk about the fact that the trading deadline has come and gone, and the Cardinals made the move that everybody knew they would make, is getting a reliever for a mid-level prospect. I do want to point out, I wanted to go find last week's episode and cut the little part where I mentioned Charlie Tilson. Because I get something right, and I don't get it right very often, so I wanted to drop it in here, and I didn't do
right.
it. but Tilson goes to the White Sox, gets a chance to immediately get called up for the White Sox, and then tears his hamstring and is out for the season. That's tough. But on the face of it, it was a typical John Mozeliak trade, and it was a very good John Mozeliak trade.
I think so, too. And, you know, he talked this morning that they were seeing the price of some of these relievers like Chapman and Miller and, you know, some of the other ones, too. It was just ridiculous, and it wasn't worth it for him to go out and get a big name when, you know, he had a piece in Tilson who, he's – you know, a solid minor league player, and he has a major league future, but there's guys, you know, right behind him who are, you know, could possibly have better major league careers, and you're able to get a guy who's, you know, had a pretty impressive couple, you know, three seasons, you know, in Zach Duke, and I think it was a pretty good trade.
It almost makes you wish that this bullpen was a little bit better, so that the Cardinals could have sold off a piece without hurting themselves to the prices that they were getting. You know, if Rosenthal is healthy and semi-effective, or especially if he was still in the closer role, I think that would have – I don't think Mo would have. But, I mean, when you're getting three, four good prospects for a Chapman, you could get two or, you know, at least a couple of mid to high level prospects probably for a Rosenthal that looked similar to what you saw last year.
Right. Yeah. You know, I think we've the last two or three years we've thought about that, and it's just something that, you know, a contending team doesn't really do is just to sell their closer. But you're right. It kind of makes sense because you can probably get, you know, overvalue for it. But it's just something that I think is not a typical John Mozeliak move.
No. I mean, it's definitely too. It's too non-conservative,
right?
For John Mozeliak. But again, I mean, in a situation like this where you could have then slid O into that spot,
right?
Then move Kevin Sechrist, assuming everybody's kind of playing to their levels that we thought they would, move a Sechrist into the eighth. You know, and you're getting back some guys that could be helping you in a couple of years. It would make some sense. Or, you know, on the flip side of that, maybe you just wish you were three or four games out farther and, you know, giving up on the season. But that's not a John Mozeliak move either. So, it's a great theoretical issue, but it would would never actually happen. Duke, like you said, he struggled his first time out. He looked much better his second time out. You know, my original looking at him was he's pitched 53 games, but he's only pitched 30-something innings.
Right.
You know, are we looking at a lefty specialist here? In which case, I wasn't that excited because that's not what this bullpen needed. But it does look like he's more of an inning, you know, inning or so guy. He could pitch the seventh. He could pitch the eighth once he gets healthy. And when you look at him in that regard, then, yes, I think it's, you know, obviously you send a guy like Tilson out for a guy like that because not only do you have him this year, you have him next year, which is, again, a typical John Mozeliak move.
You know, I saw somebody on Twitter earlier saying that you know, these moves that he's making over the last couple of years, they're all, like, you know, for a couple of years out, you know, with Brandon Moss, you know, you had him for a year and a half, and, you know, Duke. And so it's interesting to see that he's building these pieces. You know, I was able to watch Duke's debut, and it's interesting to watch. He reminds me a lot of Bartolo Colon from the left side in that he uses a lot of deception, you know, in his timing and his arm slots. And he does pretty well. I mean, if you look up his strikeout numbers, he's striking out more than nine, I think, per nine innings, which is a pretty good mark. And you know, it's an awesome, you know, awesome to see a guy reinvent himself after, you know, so many years of starting, you know, and maybe not so successfully as a starter either.
Yeah, this year he's actually striking out 10 per nine. Which is incredible. You're right. He's his starting career, I still remember, you know, those guys in Pittsburgh. As I pointed out one time on Twitter, I think Pujols owned him, and then somebody came along and said, no, I think it was Ian Snell, and he also, you know, Paul Mahomes, pretty much anybody that had a Pittsburgh uniform on for a while there, Pujols destroyed. But, you know, the Cardinals had some good luck against him. He's obviously now shifted into the bullpen, and he's been very effective in that role for a number of years now. It's not like this is a one-year deal that he's just all of a sudden very good. He's been pretty effective that way, and again, a left-hander out of the bullpen in a non-Lugie role is kind of interesting, and again, especially when you lose Tyler Lyons, and I know that's a different type of pitcher because Lyons is your 2-3-4 inning guy, but still, to have, you know, they were trying to use Lyons a little bit in that lefty spot, and now they don't have to.
Right, and I think you know, Jerome Williams, I think he's survived longer than a lot of people thought on the roster, and so you know, I don't know if he's, you know, I haven't really thought about it. I don't know if he's the odd man out tomorrow when Carpenter, if they've talked about that, you know, what happens there. But I think he's made it longer than some people thought.
Well, and then he has, you're right. Although, to be fair, today was only the second time he's actually pitched.
Right, exactly.
And it really, I mean, it's pretty obvious that the Cardinals, at least for a while, did not want him to pitch. I mean,
no.
He was not. And I honestly think, now that we know more about Lyons, that's probably a lot to be of why he's still around, because they needed somebody that could go the 3-4 innings if they needed to, and they haven't necessarily needed it too much. They used him in the game that Garcia was getting blown out, and they used him today when everything was getting blown out.
No high leverage situations for Williams.
No, and I don't think we're going to see that because there were times where they could have used him. I think in more pressing situations, and they didn't, and I just don't think they want to have him. But again, they need that you know, guy that can eat the innings on a blowout one way or the other, and
yep.
So they have to keep him on the roster for a while.
Yep.
So no, I don't know. Being that they can't send him back down to Memphis because he'd have to clear waivers.
Right. Right.
I don't know. In fact, that's one of our Twitter questions, so we'll probably get to that a little bit later in the show about how that all juggles around. But I don't know exactly how they're going to get Carpenter yeah. back on the roster. Let's see. We had Randall Grichuk go back down to Memphis when Brandon Moss came back up. Seemed to be a pretty obvious thing because after Grichuk's, you know, initial return, where I think he had a few good games, he still seems to be struggling, and he still isn't playing every day, which kind of go hand in hand.
Right. His strikeouts are, I think, increasing. It's hard to see. You know, he made the first trip to Memphis, and, you know, we thought, you know, when he came back, he started out doing well and just kind of, you know, I tapered off. And it's, I don't think we've really decided who he is as a player. Is he, you know, a guy who's maybe best suited for the bench, or, you know, can he stick in center field? I'm kind of thinking more of, you know, the first option that maybe, you know, especially when some of these guys, AAA and whatnot come up, you know, maybe he wouldn't, you know, he would be a good bench piece, a good reserve outfielder. And, you know, he seems to be handling Memphis. I know he had a home run last night, I think. Yeah. And I think he had another couple of hits tonight. And so it's, I mean, what do you do when he's, you know, he's that, you know, that I guess you would call him a quad A player at this point. You know, at what point do you keep him in Memphis or do you bring him up? I don't know. That's a tough call.
Yeah, he had three hits in his first game last night, including the home run. Like you said, he may have had another couple tonight. You're right. If he's hitting in Memphis and he's not hitting in the big leagues, it's a difficult situation to know what to do. I mean, at least it would seem to me that you give him pretty much all of August in Memphis, if at all possible, assuming no injuries or anything. Let him play the rest of the season down there at Memphis, playing every day, and hope that whatever he has, whatever he can find, can then carry up when the rosters expand in September. And hopefully you get the chance to play more often. I mean, this kind of the kicker is when he's sitting on the bench, he kind of loses whatever he's got.
Right. Right. And I think, you know, Memphis is the best spot for him just so he can get that playing time. And yeah, he's going to do well, but just keep playing, I suppose. And like you said, in September, maybe he can come up and make a few spot starts here and there.
Yeah. We'll see. That's, again, I think what they're going to do with Randall Grichuk is probably going to be a huge portion of this offseason, and I don't envy Mo trying to figure out exactly what he has there.
Yep.
Anything else? I think that's, like you said, Kit Kiefer sat around for a day and then came back when they put Lyons on the DL, and again, that's a situation that just doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. I mean, if the guy's hurting like that, hurting to the point where your long man can't make a start, you'd think you'd go ahead and put him on the disabled list, but it's the Cardinals and injuries, and we don't always understand those things.
Right.
That seems to be the case. I think that's all the moves. Anything else from this week that we need to touch on?
I don't think so. I think we hit it pretty well.
All right. Well, let's shift into our next segment, Up the Middle.
Alisea, the second for one, the double play. What a double play by Ozzie Smith. Oh, mercy.
All right. John and I discussed this earlier today. We didn't discuss. We just kind of talked about what we wanted to do in this section. And I think what we're going to try to do is just look at this team and figure out the positive signs that we see that maybe they can make a run, and the negative signs that says they're not going to make a run. You know, we're here in August. I think I saw 54 games left, which means that we got one third of the season left to go. Cardinals are, I think, still tied for the second wild card spot, even with the loss today, as the Marlins didn't play. 9 games out of the division, we're going to kind of rule that out right now.
Right.
No, we're not going to look at that. We're just talking about getting into the playoffs. And, John, what's the first thing that you can think of that gives them a chance to be a playoff team?
I think it's, you know, something that they can't control necessarily, and that's their opponents. You know, I feel like they're going to have a few games left with Cincinnati, although that's not going well right now. Milwaukee, you know, even Pittsburgh is kind of thrown in the towel a little bit. And then, you know, they have Atlanta again. So, you know, I think maybe, you know, the schedule might help them a little bit. And then, you know, it doesn't feel like really there's a team close to them who is playing very well, in that wild card spot. So, you know, I think they're hanging around because of those things. And those are two things that are not in their control really. But I think those are the first things that came into my mind.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, you're right. There's, you look at who's coming up. You've got the Braves, who are bad for the most part.
Right.
They're not as bad as they were early in the season, but they're still not good. Then you get the Reds again, and again, Reds are bad.
Right.
They weren't this week, but they're better than they
right.
have been. You got four of the Cubs. You got two of the Astros. That's not so good. Phillies are weaker. You got a Mets, which is a good chance to take, you know, to put a team that's in your race out or give
right.
them a little nudge. Then you got the A's, who are weak, the Brewers, who are weak,
the Reds again,
the Pirates again, who have no Francisco Liriano
right.
to throw at you, the Brewers again.
See, that stretch right there from August 26th all the way to September 11th, I mean, that's a pretty good stretch right there where, you know, you could make some ground. And then, like you said, it gets pretty tough.
Yeah, that last little stretch can be. You got the Cubs, and you go to the Giants. You go to the Rockies, who right now are still kind of in the fringes of this race.
Mm-hmm.
Get the Cubs again before you finish up at least the last six games. You get the Reds and the Pirates, the last seven games to end the season. So if you can get through, even from now till the middle of September, you know, you do have a few problems here and there, but the schedule does play to their favor. Now, you know, they've got to figure out how to win at home. Because there's 12 games in August at home, and then, you know, 14 more in September to October. So 28 of those 54 games are at home. They got to figure out how to win, because if they can't play, you know, over 500 baseball at home, they're just doesn't matter who you're playing, it's not going to work.
Right. And, you know, kind of looking at the wild card standings, you have the Marlins and the Cardinals are tied. The Mets are one back. The Pirates and the Rockies are 2.5 back. And then the Phillies are way back in eight back. So it's pretty much, it appears to be about we got six teams fighting for about, you know, fighting for the two spots. So, you know, that's, and you know, other than maybe the Rockies a little bit, you know, nobody's really jumping up there.
Right. I mean, the Mets have lost to Cespedes for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, Pittsburgh made some moves to get, you know, they did trade their closer.
They did, yeah.
They did trade Liriano.
And a start, yeah.
You know, and again, that's just, anytime you get rid of Liriano, that's good for the Cardinals.
Right.
And then, yeah, you got the Rockies, who are the playing the best. I mean, they're 8-2 in their last 10.
They just lost Trevor Story, though.
They just lost Trevor Story, which could be a big deal. And you've got to wonder how much, and this is a team that's never won before. Will they be able to continue down the stretch? Will they fade?
Yeah. Right.
So, I mean, the teams that you're playing, and to schedule, all that works together for this team. All right. Is there any? Let's just do all the positives. And I think the other positive is you get Matt Carpenter back.
Right.
You know, the team played pretty well with the guys hurt, but now you're going to get Carpenter back. You've got Moss back. You've got Peralta back. Yes, you've lost Diaz, but you've gotten those three big bats in there. And I know that the pitching is, like you said, the bigger issue, but, you know, maybe you can outslug some teams with those guys in the lineup. You know, that you're getting at least a fairly intact team, except for Diaz.
Yeah, I think that's a big key. Yeah, you know, you're kind of pretty much where you're at the beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. You know, you didn't at the beginning of the season, you didn't expect Diaz to be who he is. You know, so you're kind of, you know, going with that, the infield that you thought you might have had with Carpenter, Peralta, possibly Wong, and, you know, Adams/Moss over there at first. So from that point, you're pretty healthy. Yes, you're missing you know, your shortstop who's had we'll say an all-star season, because he was. But yeah, you're finally getting to the point where you're mostly healthy. So you're right. I think at this point we're going to have to score a lot of runs to win some games.
Yeah. And you've gotten Duke. It should help the bullpen. You know, there is a lot of talent on the pitching staff. If it starts to click with this offense, you can make a run.
Yeah.
All right. Flip side of that, what's the biggest down, you know, negative thing, the reason that they won't make a run?
I'm going to go with the arms, the pitching staff. You've got to get, you know, I think we're on at least three, maybe more. I'm trying to look back at the schedule. Martinez went seven again. But you have three straight starts where your starter went five innings, and that's just going to kill your bullpen. And so they need to be more consistent, I think. And you've seen each one of the starters, I feel like, has had a couple rough outings lately. And so without consistency from your starting rotation, that's going to cause your bullpen to be overworked, and they've already had issues. So I think the problems, the thing that could keep them out of the race would be the pitching, which is something, if this was 12 months ago and we would have said fast forward, the arms would be the problem. I think we would think that we had something wrong with us. But I don't know, that's what I'm thinking. What are you thinking, Daniel?
I think that's reasonable, and it probably ties into what is the more esoteric, you know, feeling of this team just can't put a run together. We've not seen them do that. We can't see them put.
Right.
They don't win 8 of 10. They don't win, you know, 15 of 20. They don't, you know, even that's maybe. But you know, they don't. They've got a 5-game winning streak this year, which is decent. But then they followed up with like a 3-game or 4-game losing streak. I mean, it's, and as we talked about earlier, the statement wins, if you will, put that in quotes. You know, momentum is the next day's starting pitcher, and they're just as likely to lose the next game as they are to continue this, you know, momentum building run. I don't feel like, even though we were, as I was kind of talking on Twitter, you know, 2011 at this time, we were still talking about how inconsistent this team was and all this, and they were able to come together for that massive run, and they wouldn't have to do anything like that. I mean, the Cardinals just have to match the Marlins pretty much
for the next
month and a half. They don't have to do anything dramatic. But even so, it's just you don't see that. And I think you're right. It's because the starting pitchers don't go out there and give you 7 innings of 1-run, 2-run ball on a regular basis. You're going to, you know, if you look at that rotation right now, Adam Wainwright, for the most part, you could believe we go out and give you 7 innings. Carlos Martinez, you almost expect to give you 7 innings. After that, I mean, if Michael Walkham makes it through, you know, 5, you're pretty good shape.
Right.
Mike Leake right now may give you 5 or 6, but he may give up 6 runs to do
it. Right.
And then Jaime Garcia, you just really don't. I mean, he could not. You know,
he could throw a complete game, or he could, you know, 4 innings.
Absolutely.
5 innings. Yep.
And like you said, now maybe that's less of an issue come, you know, the end, if they still are in it at the September and the roster call-ups, because you have more arms out there. But, you know, you got to get to that point first. I think you're right. I think that's the biggest thing. There's some consistency issues with the offense sometimes, but for the most part, I mean, barring today, which is going to happen to anybody eventually, they seem to be able to put up 4, 5, 6 runs on a decent regular basis. So you just got to hope that the pitching staff can hold people down. Flip side of that, let's go back though. Maybe one of the positives is we may see some of those young arms early, and they may make an impact. And we've talked a lot about Alex Reyes and making him that call up, but you know, I know you've mentioned it today, and I know Mo mentioned it in the thing. It's really sounded like Luke Weaver's passed Alex Reyes, at least in the idea of being called up this year.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, that I think that's starting to become more common sense to a lot of people, just the way that Weaver's pitching. You know, Mo mentioned this morning, if you look at Weaver's walk and strikeout rates at Springfield, I think, to quote him, I think he said they're legendary, honestly. and so He's not walking guys. He's striking out guys, which is something we haven't seen him do really that much. And, you know, Mo said this morning, he said, you know, Alex Reyes is known for touching 100, but he said most people don't know it, but Luke Weaver's touched 97. So he's someone that, yeah, he's past Alex Reyes right now, and Reyes still has that ace potential. But I think we're going to see Luke Weaver. I don't know if we'll see him in August, but definitely I think right around September 1st. And he's going to, I think, provide a big boost to the bullpen.
And that's, and I wanted to talk a little bit about that because we've made the comparison before of Alex Reyes being the Oscar Tavares and Luke Weaver being the Stephen Piscotty.
Right.
You know, the more regular. Is it feels like to me, just from what I know, and which is limited, that Reyes with his, you know, really powerful fastball and things of that nature would be maybe better for that bullpen role, whereas Weaver might be better for a starting role. Do you think Weaver can make that adjustment to the bullpen and be a factor?
Yeah, I think it would be easier to. Yeah, I think they could both make the adjustment to the bullpen. And you're right. I think that, you know, Reyes, you know, maybe, you know, let's give him. Let's say he has three solid starts in a row. Then I think you start looking at him for a bullpen spot because, you know, if he can handle one inning at a time and he can, you know, control that fastball, then he can really let it go. And then, you know, he could really make some noise. But you're right. I could see that totally happening where, you know, he would be more suited for the bullpen right now. I don't know how much I would want to trust Luke Weaver for an extended period starting yet. I don't know if we're quite there, but I think he could make a spot start, and I think he could be solid in there.
Yeah, I mean, right now, I mean, it's an issue that we maybe will touch on later on, but, you know, there isn't a spot for anybody in the starting rotation. I mean, for whatever the issues that we were talking about and how people can't go deep, there's no place to move those guys. I mean, they have to be the starters. I mean, you can't move Mike Leake to the bullpen.
No.
Because, one, it doesn't work, and two, you're paying $80 million to him.
Right.
So there's nothing else to do. So I was just wondering how Weaver's, you know, overall game would able to translate to that one. I mean, is he, you know what I'm saying? Because the starters will set the people up and things of that nature. Can he come in for one inning and be just effective?
Yeah, I think so, because he's got that good velocity and he's got a really good mix of pitches too. So I think he would be fine in there. You know, there are some minor league pitchers, a guy by the name of Matt Pierce who pitches for Palm Beach. He's kind of like a Seth Maness type who I don't know if he would be able to handle, you know, coming up for, I mean, obviously not him, but just that type of pitcher coming up for a major league role. But I think with Weaver, his velocity, his ability to throw strikes, and his good mix of pitches, I think he could handle it.
Yeah. And again, those kind of things may help. I mean, you know, we've kind of felt like one of the things around the trade deadline, not that we disagreed with what Mo said, not that I disagreed. I don't want to speak for you necessarily. I know you didn't disagree with what Mo did either, but it felt like almost like it needed that 2011, 2013 kick of the pants type trade.
Even though
you didn't know what it would be or how it would work or if it would even be the smart thing, it just kind of feels like this team needed that little bit of shakeup, and maybe that's just us looking from the outside. And I think Mo's shown that if it needs it, he'll do that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that's it right there. I think, you know, he's shown to do it, and maybe it just wasn't there this year. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's someone like Matt Adams who's been around for a while. You know, I'm trying to think of, you know, Colby Rasmus or, you know, Alan Craig. What type like that would be just, you know, kind of a big shakeup. I don't know who that would be. But, you know, he's done it before, and he would do it again, I think, if he thought it would help. Maybe just the match wasn't there. I don't know.
Probably so. And I think that, I mean, you look at guys like Colton Wong, Randall Grichuk even, that are struggling this year. They didn't have the track record like Alan Craig did. Alan Craig was struggling, but he had this idea that, yeah, he could turn it back and be that 300 hitter. Never has been. I assume he's still in the minor leagues with the Red Sox, but, you know, that they didn't have that, so you couldn't ship them off for anything of value, so you don't do it. But anyway, so maybe instead of that kick in the butt trade, maybe it is a Reyes or a Weaver coming up and taking somebody's spot in August when they weren't expecting it. I don't know. But it does feel like this team, as constructed the way it plays now, the only saving grace is that nobody else in the wild card race is tearing it up
either. You know, hopefully we can, it would be nice to separate a little bit from those teams, but that's not happening.
No. And like I said, we're done with the Marlins. That's very tough to lose. You know, if you win that game on Sunday, which would have taken a comeback, which they had done to tie it, but, you know, if you win that game on Sunday and you leave there, you know, a game up, I think, that's, excuse me, just as very helpful. You know, you do have three games left with the Mets. You got to kind of take that series. You got to maybe, by the time we get to Colorado, they may have fallen out of it. But if not, you got to make sure you win those kind of games and then kind of hold your own with some of these weaker teams.
So, yep.
So to wrap this part up, given your choice, given your pick right now, are they making the playoffs?
I'm going to say so. I'm going to say they're going to get one of the wild card spots. I think the starting pitching will stabilize a little bit, and with that kind of that stretch of a little weaker of a schedule, I think they'll be able to sneak in there. What do you think?
I think probably so. I just, part of me worries, besides the fact that I really always worry about that play-in game, part of me also worries that this race will go down to the last day or two, mm-hmm. which means you're going to have to throw a Wainwright or Carlos Martinez to win that spot, which means that you're going to have a Jaime Garcia or a Michael Walker or Mike Leake for that play-in game, and we're going to have a whole lot of sound and fury signifying nothing.
Right.
You know, I mean, you want to get there, and we've, you know, this team has shown numerous times in the past that once you get there, things can change. And I've also thought that there's absolutely nothing that would be even better. I think even more than winning the World Series this year, if you won that play-in game and then beat the Cubs in the first round, that might be enough. I mean, you know, knocking them out of the playoffs when they were supposed to be the super team, I think all of us would say, hey, it's worth it.
Right. Yeah, I would agree.
All right, we've done enough on that. Let's talk about the futures report.
0-1 to Pujols. In the air, left field, and Pujols has given St. Louis the lead. A dramatic, towering three-run home run. Stunned in disbelief here in Houston.
All right, John, who you got for us tonight?
All right, so, you know, I've had a few questions about David Washington, who's playing with Memphis right now. He actually hit another home run tonight, so he's got 27 home runs on the season combined, 22 with Memphis, 5 with Springfield, and that puts him about third in all of minor league baseball, 27 home runs. And this guy has been around for a long time. He was the Cardinals' 15th round pick in 2009, so he's been around, yeah. And he's a big power guy for sure. But he's also a big strikeout guy. And I think that's probably, you know, if you look back at Xavier Scruggs, mm-hmm. He reminds me a lot of him, maybe from the left side, a big, strikeout guy who I think that's kind of hurt him a little bit. And, you know, I kind of look back and to see if maybe his defense was holding him back, and not really. He's played first base and I think right field. But he's having his strikeouts are actually at his highest of his career this season with Memphis, but he's also walking a little bit more. You know, he's got an on base of 346. He's got an OPS of 902, which is a little bit that's a little higher. So it's, you know, he's one of those guys that I think a lot of people don't know who could maybe see some time in September as a call up. I think depending on how things fall with the 40-man roster. But, you know, he's one of those guys, and we've talked about these guys before, that the Cardinals kind of, you know, they give him a little cup of coffee just for their service. He's someone that could see that. And it's just an interesting stat line. And I'm kind of baffled as far as why he hasn't given a little bit more of a shot. You know, I don't expect him to produce on the major league level on a daily basis, but a guy with a big power number who's performed pretty well over his career, you know, what the story is there. And I'm sure there's more to it, but he's someone to watch for a possible call up.
Well, it sounds to me, I mean, again, Dave, he's a name that I heard in spring training, but I was honestly, I think the first time I had ever heard it, But it seems to me, just listening to you, that he's a guy that we would have seen last year when the offense was so weak. We saw Xavier Scruggs come up. We've seen, you know, they would have probably tried maybe anybody that could hit. And this year the offense just isn't that much of an issue, which is a problem for him because then he gets kind of stuck. And he's playing positions that aren't necessarily in a huge need right now. So,
and this, you know, this is his first year at Memphis. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it took him a while to work his way up. Once he hit 2014, he finally made it to Palm Beach. 2015 was Palm Beach and Springfield, and then 2016 Springfield and Memphis. So he's kind of slowly made his way up, and he's 25 years old, so he's not, you know, he's kind of aging out of the prospect realm, I would say. But he's 6'5", 200, so he's a big guy who can play first base and the outfield. It'll be interesting to see what they do with him. And, you know, let me count these years, 2001, 2003, 2004, 2005. So he's getting close to becoming a minor league free agent, too. So this may be his last year in the system, and so they may want to see what they have in him. And if they can put him on the 40-man roster, they protect him for a little bit longer. So I think there's a lot that – it's kind of the Scruggs thing, too. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see if anything happens with him.
Yeah, the 40-man's getting a little crowded right
now.
It
is, yep.
But there are people that can come off of that, sure. I think, pretty easily if they wanted to do that. Now, it's going to depend on people like Weaver and Reyes if they're going to come up too. But, I agree. I think that's the kind of a guy that the Cardinals would like to bring up, not only to reward them for a good season this year, but for, you know, being the good soldier, you know, and hopefully – you know, and like I said, if he comes up and hits two or three home runs in September, you know, maybe he gets another look at next year. Or if nothing else, maybe he becomes at least some sort of a prospect. Because it feels like Mo's going to have to do some trading this offseason. You know, maybe he's a chip that goes with somebody else. So,
you want to talk about Davis Ward?
Yeah, let's do that now. For some that have followed me, maybe know. I think I interviewed Davis couple of years ago. Davis is the grandson of a longtime church member going to church with me forever. I've known for a long, long time. Davis was drafted in 2014. He was Mr. Irrelevant, if you will.
Yeah.
He was the last pick of the draft that year. But, you know, I have seen the Cardinals talk about him. He's a control guy that is not going to strike out a lot of batters and John and I were talking about this beforehand, but he's a guy that he had Tommy John surgery last year. He's a guy that I think, you know, if the Cardinals are looking at overall results, you know, maybe even though he was drafted to the 40th spot, that's not a spot that the Cardinals would immediately rule him out from ever moving up.
Right. And, you know, kind of looking at his numbers a little bit, he's, you know, striking out less than 4 per 9 innings, but he's really not walking many either. So, you know, that's, he's got that going for him. I think a big downfall for him is that he's 24 and at Palm Beach. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see if, and you know, he missed the season with, Tommy John. So it'd be interesting to see if they like him and he could be in Springfield, before the season ends if there's an opening. He's, you know, I think someone that he's 20 innings into the season and he's got a 1.74 ERA and, you know, he's shown some success out of that bullpen.
Yeah, and, you know, the Cardinals do aggressive promotions and, and again, like you said, age-wise, he's getting a little bit older. He doesn't have the experience
coming out
because he came out of, you know, drafted out of college here at a small school in Arkansas. In fact, if you've picked up Rob Raines' book, and I think you have it, but you haven't read it yet.
Yeah, I'm slowly going through it.
There is a chapter on Davis Ward in his book, so it's kind of interesting to see that. But anyway,
it's interesting. Just looking up his numbers, opponents are only hitting .205 against him. So, you know, he's not striking out guys, but maybe he's getting weak contact against him. That's something to think about. But, you know, kind of going back to the point that he's only 20 innings in, you know, I feel like the Cardinals, they don't need to see that much necessarily from guys to promote him. And a good example is Rowan Wick. Mm-hmm. He got promoted pretty fast from Palm Beach to Springfield and has had success there. So that's something to watch for.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. It'd be nice to see him
Closer to home.
Yeah, definitely.
For you, yeah.
I know his grandparents would like to get a chance to go see him play, too. So.
Yep.
All right. Anything else in the minors? I mean, we're looking at what, basically the last month of the season here for those guys, aren't we?
Yeah, and I think, you know, we might be getting to a point where we don't see many more big prospects get promoted. I think, you know, June and July is kind of the big season for that. I think, you know, maybe around playoff time, if one team gets eliminated and then you have other teams kind of in the playoff hunt, you might see some guys fill in for the playoffs. But, yeah, about a month left, and it'll be interesting when we get closer to September who could possibly, you know, get a call up for expanded rosters.
Yeah, I'm actually supposed to go out with some friends of mine down to Little Rock this Saturday to watch the Travelers, who happen to be playing Springfield at the time. So I'm looking forward to seeing some people down there.
There you go. Yeah.
Obviously not Luke Weaver, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But I don't know that he was scheduled to pitch anyway, so it mattered.
Right.
All righty. Well, if that'll wrap the futures, and we'll go to our last segment, Swinging Away.
Tying run at second base. In the air to right center. This game is tied. Going to third is Pujols, and it's 9-9. They just won't go away.
All right. Well, we've got our pretty good slate of Twitter questions here. And we'll start with STL Cards Minimo. I think he may have had a question for us last time, too. And this will help us transition from our talk about the minors. He says, what are the chances of Weaver, Reyes, and Bader being September call-ups, and should we be expecting this?
I don't know if we should be expecting it, but I think let's rank them as far as who we think gets called up, you know, maybe first, or who has a greater chance. You know, I think Weaver's the top of that list. Mm-hmm. You know, I did something interesting the other day using that Memphis to St. Louis I-55. I kind of put some cities, you know, how close they were mm-hmm. to St. Louis. That was kind of fun to do, and you know, Weaver was the closest one. And then I think Reyes maybe is ahead of Bader a little bit, but I think there's a chance you could see all three of them. But it's going to be hard because they all have to be added to the 40-man roster. And like you said just a minute ago, it's getting pretty full, but they could maybe make some moves. So I don't know if maybe all three of them, but I would say the pitchers probably have the better chance. You'd like to see Bader, but if not, I think that's okay.
Yeah, just kind of glancing real quick at the, and I think you're right. I think that's kind of the order. I'm not 100% sure on Bader, but yeah, I think Weaver probably gets his called up in August, and then
yeah, that wouldn't surprise me.
And then Reyes maybe right at the beginning of September. Looking at the 40 man, you could put Tim Cooney on the 60-day DL. You could put Marco Gonzalez on the 60-day DL. There's two spots right there. I don't know if the 60-day have it at limit. I don't know that it does.
Well, I don't know. I think it depends on if they were injured in the minor leagues. I don't know if that has anything to do with it, if they could go on the 60-man deal. I don't know.
I don't know. Gonzalez, I don't know. Be interesting. That's an interesting discussion, too. If you could, there's two spots there.
Sure.
You've got Mike Myers on there, and I know there's some talk about moving him to the bullpen, but whether depending on how you wanted to look at it. Jerome Williams could probably be cut and nobody would notice, especially when you get to September. You know, Mike Ullman, maybe. Dean Anna, I think, is an easy one. You know, we talked a little bit about Anthony Garcia before.
Did you say Jerome Williams?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And then Jose Martinez. And I don't know much about him.
Yeah, he could, yeah.
You think it's possible there?
It's possible there, yeah. Yeah, they've got, you know, I think he plays first base for Memphis, and they've got some guys who could fill in, so that's a possibility too, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and like I said, if you can move Cooney and Gonzalez, and you may not be able to, like you said, with the minor leagues, but if you can, those are the two easiest ones to do.
Yeah.
And hopefully not, but if Tyler Lyons' knee issue becomes too much, you know, if it looks like he's going to be out for the rest of the year, then you move him to the 60-day. But
right.
Hopefully not. That's not good to have the patron pitcher out for that long. So. All right. Next question comes from next two questions come from our regular correspondent, Ben Kelly, Beefcake 5 on Twitter. First question is, as we just kind of referenced earlier, with Diaz out, do you expect him to send down another outfielder when Karp comes back? And any guess on who?
You know, my first thought is a pitcher goes, because they're carrying that extra pitcher. But, and you know, Jerome Williams would have to clear waivers. Kiefer could go back down. I think you go with a pitcher. I'm not sure who, though.
Yeah, I think if the bullpen's healthy, and
right.
I mean, that, you know, whatever little bug or whatever that was going around has cleared out and they feel pretty confident that their guys are good. You know, you probably send Kiefer down again because you do have the options on him.
You could go Hazelbaker. I didn't realize he was still there.
That's the other. If they're gonna keep all those pitchers, which again, a 12 hitter, 13 pitcher split is just wrong in my book.
Right, I agree.
You know, 13-12 is sometimes kind of iffy. You know, I guess because I grew up in the days when it was 14-11, if you know, at best. So if you're gonna keep that, then it's probably Hazelbaker. It's a toss up between him and Pham, but I think Pham's probably done. I mean, I don't know. I think it's flip a coin on those two, really.
I think we're either Hazelbaker or Pham or a pitcher.
and I think the pitcher has to be Kiefer.
Kiefer, yeah.
Because I just don't think they're going to, like I said, they need that long guy that even if they're not going to use Williams, they have to have him around for insurance. So.
Yep.
And then Mr. Kelly's second question is, if you were Mike Matheny, would you play Greg Garcia or Johnny Peralta more at shortstop?
I think you have to go with Peralta. I just think when he's healthy, he's a middle of the lineup guy who can you know, do so well. Not really taking much away from Garcia. He's played pretty well, and you know, I think he's led off quite a bit, and you know, I like him in that spot. But I still think Johnny Peralta doesn't belong on the bench. I don't think.
Well, but I don't know that you have to do that, because he's just saying if you play him at shortstop, you could put
you can move him around. Sure,
and then put Carpenter back at
second.
And
yep,
basically
sure.
Let Garcia be Diaz in this situation, you know, not with the bat. But,
you can do that. Sure. Yeah. Carpenter, Peralta, Garcia. You could do that. Or Peralta, Garcia, and Carpenter. There's a lot of flexibility there. Sure.
The problem, I think, in my mind, is I think Garcia works best in small doses. I have a feeling that he gets a little bit exposed if he's going to play every day. So.
Yep.
As much as I do think that Garcia is probably the only guy that can play leadoff with Carpenter back gone, with Carpenter coming back, you're not going to need that. I'd probably play Peralta more at shortstop, but I think there are days where you put Garcia at short and Peralta at third, or you know, you could put Peralta on the bench and you've got Jerko, because you got to have a place for the way Jed Jerko's playing. He really needs to play pretty regularly too. So, I think I'm in with you. I think I go Peralta more with that, with the way things are right now.
Yeah.
All right, we have John, and his name is, I don't know, Tufel Shunned 4. and I'm not exactly sure where that comes from, but he has the question of, why doesn't this team compete with an edge?
I saw that question, and my first thought is, what does that mean? I don't know what that means, really. What do you think?
I think it means just that hunger that, and I think it goes. I think it also goes along with the idea that they can't put any kind of streak together.
Right.
That they're not playing. You know. Well, I think of course this comes after today when they were, you know, basically not hitting anything.
Right.
But they do sometimes feel like they're going through the motions, I think, at times.
I don't know if that's necessarily fair to say maybe that they're not. You know, that you know, the edge is not there. You know, I'm sure that they want it just as much, you know, as much as anybody else. But I get the frustration for sure, no doubt. I mean, you know, I sent a message to our good friends Corey Rudd and Art Lippo just saying, I think this team is just so frustrating to watch. And so I get it for sure.
Yeah. And if they don't, and again, I think it goes back to the manager too, because
yeah.
I mean, the last time I would say we could think, and sometimes edge also goes along with just winning, you know, and then
right.
Heather got that edge. They got that winning edge. And so maybe you look at 13 and 14 as when they had it. But I think if you really wanted to go back to a team that grinded out that bats, that really, you have to almost go back to 2010, 2011 under Tony La Russa, who was that kind of hard-nosed, you know,
right.
Everything has to be done. Whether Mike Matheny is or not, he doesn't come across that way.
Yeah,
he does not
I would
come
agree
across
that.
As a guy that is just, you know, and he's, you know, he's supposed to be the leader of men. And you've got to be difficult to do that when you're, mm-hmm. you know, grinding. So that I don't want this to sound like you have to get rid of Mike Matheny and get this hard nosed, you know, old school manager in there. I don't think that's true. I think this team can win with Mike Matheny. They've won with Mike Matheny for five
right.
years.
Right.
But you know, there comes a time when you're going to take that, you take on kind of the characteristics of the leadership that you've got. And that's somewhat, you know, Mike will occasionally blow his top, but most of the time he's just standing there with a blank look. And I don't want to say blank look on, but, you know, that kind
right.
of stoic look
stoic,
on his
yeah.
face. That may be better
yeah.
to say. And so maybe that comes along where you think, hey, tomorrow's another day and we get him then. Which, that's not a bad thing in baseball, I don't guess.
Right. Yeah, I get, from the question standpoint, I get how the manager doesn't have an edge. I get that completely. You know, it seems like, you know, if you know, if people question him, he gets mad for you questioning him. Or, you know, if you question him, he just, you know, it's his way or, you know, whatever. And it's, you know, I get that for sure. And And you're right. I think a lot of times the team takes on the personality of the manager.
Yeah. And, you know, to some degree, you get the personnel in there that work with the manager. I mean,
right.
you know, but that's kind of why we talked about this a couple weeks ago, right after Chris Sale cut up all the jerseys, that we kind of felt like maybe this team needed a guy like Chris Sale because – you know, they've had a John Lackey, they've had a Chris Carpenter, they've had this crusty
Kierzynski
veteran
for a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, and they don't have that now.
Nope.
And so maybe that's something that they need to have, that edge that yep. John's talking about here. That may be part of it as well. You know, again, I've noticed somebody pointed out, I think it was our friend Joe Schwartz, St. Louis Cup of Joe, when he was talking about this interview, that John Mozeliak seemed to know a lot about the contract of Chris Sale.
That was me. And,
oh, gee, okay.
And it was interesting listening to it. And, you know, it was just kind of, I threw that out there because it's just, you know, to get people talking. But, yeah, he was talking about the options that he had and how much they were. And it was just interesting to hear. And, you know, it's probably one of those things that every general manager knows to an extent. But it was interesting to hear that, you know, he knew all this stuff about him because one of the guys on the show asked a hypothetical, like, you know, what would it take to get someone like Chris Sale? And, you know, his – Mozeliak's argument was, and we've talked about this, is his value beyond this year. Mm-hmm. And so he went into the options, how they're all team options and how much they are. So it was just interesting to hear that he knew that much.
I imagine, I would expect that they did their due diligence
yeah,
on that.
For sure.
On
for
maybe
sure.
made some calls as well. But
yep.
And, you know, who knows? Off season, maybe something happens because you know, John Mozeliak's going to have to – I feel like John Mozeliak has to do something this offseason just because
yeah.
there's eight different starters for next year. And I know
yeah.
that's never stopped him before from holding on to them all, but it's getting to the point where you can't do – you know, you run out of ideas. So.
And you have to wonder, going back to the question about and you know, thinking that this team can't put together a winning streak, mm-hmm. You know, you have to wonder if lacking a true ace, you know, Wainwright – you know, he's been the ace, but, you know, they don't really, I don't feel like they have that stopper right now and someone that you can just shut someone down. And so maybe, you know, you're right. You got the pieces. Maybe you go out and get someone like that.
Maybe.
This offseason.
Yeah. You know, we're kind of in that, we've talked to somewhat about it before, about this transitional time where Wainwright is still the ace.
Right.
At least on paper. And don't get me wrong, Wainwright, you know, you can, I expect him to go out and throw you good games. I expect seven innings out of him still. You know, we saw a nine-inning shutout out of him recently. That's probably a little bit high. You're not going to see that as often, but I still think he's going out there and giving you probably the best chance to win. But then it's transitioning into Carlos Martinez, who's going to be this ace, at least right now it looks like an ace for years to come, but he's not quite there yet. And so maybe you do get a guy like, you know, a Chris Sale that kind of helps Martinez finish off that, you know, transition into the staff ace while, you know, supporting him at all. I mean, I don't know. Again, that's going to be something, and we'll have lots of time to talk about the offseason, I'm sure. Last question came in just a little bit ago from Twitter user Matty Teeks. Will Matheny's constant strategic errors ultimately be his undoing?
And I think there's something to that. I don't know how and when that would happen, but you know, we've kind of talked about a timeline as far as what, you know, what it would take for Matheny to lose his job. But I think there's something to that. You know, it's obvious he's not a good technical manager. And I think if it comes back and bites him too often and it creates losing seasons, then there's something there. I don't think as long as the team's winning, and by that, you know, above 500, I don't know when that would happen, but you know, maybe there's something to that.
Yeah, I think, you know, again, Mike Matheny was hired to be the leader of men and learn the tactic part of the game as he went.
Right.
And we're 5 years into this, and Matheny has learned. I mean, like I said, bringing in O, whether his hands are forced or not, in the eighth is something we wouldn't have done. He bunts less than he used to. You know, there's still flaws, but he's better than he used to be.
And I think what's going to get him maybe let go faster would be losing the clubhouse. Because like you just said, that's kind of his strength. And so if that goes, then I think you have a better chance of seeing something happen.
Absolutely. I mean, if he loses the clubhouse, you know, he's probably out the next week. You know, I mean, not quite that bad, but that's where it would be. But I think even it comes to the point, yeah, it's going to take a losing season or at least a non-playoff season or two, probably way one. I think if he missed the playoffs this year and he didn't make the playoffs at 17, you know, that's probably it. Even if everybody still loves him, I think they would probably start to think that needs to be done. Unless he had injuries or some sort of, you know, very reasonable excuse. But, I think that there's going to come a point. I think that, like you say, we talked about John Mozeliak talking about the bullpen. You know, maybe the roster's too flexible. And there's some things that make you think that, you know, Matheny's not as solid as he was. Now, we got to remember, as all these people that are talking about, you know, can Matheny get fired this year? No, Matheny can't get fired this year.
He's not going anywhere this year or off season. No, it's not happening.
Unless he decides he wants to, but I don't see that happening either. Because you got to remember, not only has he taken the team to the playoffs for 4 years, which, you know, say it's in spite of him or whatever, he's gone to the playoffs for 4 years. Right. This is John Mozeliak's first selection as manager. You know, he's going to give him a lot of rope because it reflects on him too.
Sure.
And I don't, you know, obviously I think he's been justified in what he did because of the success that the team has had, at least over the last 4 years. But, you know, he's not going to, if it was somebody else, you know, if it was a situation that he walked into, you know, maybe he's a little bit more, you know, shorter rope. But I think Matheny gets as much as he needs to hang himself.
Yeah, and it's interesting, you know, living down here in Atlanta, the Braves just, you know, they just had Freddie Gonzalez, and it seemed like every day listening to sports talk, people complaining about him. And even, you know, before him with Bobby Cox, you know, Hall of Fame manager, there are a lot of people not happy. So I feel like, you know, if you go across the board, you know, the majority of major league teams, you'll find, you know, maybe not such as a big a base as here of people who dislike the manager, but I think that's kind of a common theme, is to question managers. And I think a lot of Cardinals fans maybe don't see that so much. I'm not saying that Matheny's not deserving of the criticism, he is, but I think that it's something that happens, you know, around the league for sure.
Yeah, I know that I saw, you know, last year I would see some of the same criticism that Matheny got of Don Mattingly when he was at the Dodgers.
Yeah.
Clint Hurdle gets his share at times from the Pirates, even though he's taken the Pirates, you know, from this, you know, wasteland to where they are now. I don't think he gets as much of it, but he does get some.
It's funny, I had a couple of weeks ago someone tweet me and say, you know, Joe Madden, you know, Cubs fans don't complain about Joe Madden. I did a simple search on Twitter, you know, Joe Madden, and I pulled up a couple, you know, a few tweets of people who weren't happy with his bullpen management. And it's like, you know, people are going to find, and again, we're not saying that Mike Matheny is not deserving of criticism, mm-hmm. but people are going to find, you know, fault in pretty much every manager, I think.
Yeah, because that's what we focus. I mean, you know, like I said, our focus is strictly, for the most part, strictly on this team. And
sure.
We don't worry about, you know, I think, you know, we might see the opposing manager make a mistake once, you know, once in a series.
Right.
But we're seeing Mike Matheny every day. And so when he makes two mistakes in a week, then, you know, it adds to the pile. So, but yeah, Mike, you know, anybody that thinks Mike Matheny is going to leave,
No.
Yeah, it's just not. It's not gonna happen.
No.
That's all our Twitter questions. Couple of things. One, we saw Lance Lynn, in Miami. He's throwing off the mound. It sounds like maybe he'll even get into like a minor league game.
Another game. Yeah.
Here this month. And while I don't think anybody expects a return this season, which would be kind of crazy. It feels like he's farther along even than what we saw Adam Wainwright a few years ago. He sounds like he's going to be, in theory, really ready for opening a spring training.
I think that's great. I don't think there's any need to rush anything because you have the whole off season, and you know he's not gonna make an impact of this year. So there's no reason to rush. So it's just another arm that you'll have for next year. And again, you have all these interesting dilemmas that are going to start happening with, you know, possibly Reyes and Weaver being ready or close to it, you know, Lynn coming back, you know, Gonzalez and Cooney will be ready. There's a ton of guys who could, you know, stake their claim for something, for major league time. I don't know how that's going to happen, but it'll be interesting for sure.
Yeah, I mean, again, it feels like Mo has to make some sort of move.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't, you know, I mean, in theory, he could just decline Garcia's option, but I think that's not real smart.
No, I don't think so either.
Yeah.
And I don't know what moves you would make. You know, I don't, any of the guys starting right now, I mean, I guess maybe the one that could maybe you could see go would be Waka. I mean, Wainwright, Martinez aren't going to go. Leek's not going to go anywhere. Garcia's not going to go anywhere. So I think Waka's the one guy, but I don't know how much value he has right now.
See, I would argue that Garcia still might. I could see them picking up the option and then trading him.
That's possible.
I mean, he's a 1 year. I mean, I think they should have done that last year.
Right.
Just because I think with 2 years of control, they might have gotten more out of him. But still, to have a guy like Garcia, a left-hander that's, you know, been healthy for 2 years.
Right. Yeah, this has been his longest stretch of healthiness, I think, in a while.
So trading before somebody.
Right.
Before he walks into a glass door or something.
Right.
All right. You were on with Mr. Buffa this morning.
Yep.
If people want to hear that, that's on InsideSTL.com. Sounded good. Enjoyed it?
Yeah, it was fun, for sure. Yep. It's good to hear. You know, good to talk to those guys for sure.
Yep, Dan has seemed to have gotten in. I know Matt Whitener is with him as well.
Yep.
Seemed to have taken to it well, so that's
yep.
good to know. One question for you, and then we'll wrap this up. Two giveaways this weekend in St. Louis. They have the fedora, which I think some people are saying is not an actual fedora, but I don't know enough about hats to say.
Right.
So, the fedora or the old timey Cardinal bobblehead. Given the choice, which one do you want?
I gotta go with the bobblehead.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
All right.
What do you think?
I think I'd like the fedora. I don't think I would actually wear it very often.
Right.
But because I've always wanted, it's like I've always wanted to wear a fedora, but then I also think I would look really stupid with a fedora. So
that's my thing. I don't think I look very good at it.
Yeah, but still, I might try it on and you know, who knows? But that the bobblehead, yeah, I take it, but it's just a little creepy, I gotta say. just a little bit.
Yeah.
All right. Cardinals play the Braves starting tomorrow, 3-game set. Then they play the Reds again for 3 before going to Wrigley Field. We'll probably be recording this after one or two of those Cubs games next week. So, it just, again, it's a big week. They got to figure out how to win at home. They've got to beat weak teams, and then they've got to hopefully hold their own against the Cubs just to make it interesting.
Yep.
So.
Yep, I agree.
All right, we'll be back at you next week. We'll try to do it again, see if we can get it right. For John Nagel, I'm Daniel Shopton. Good night.
Suter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's a winner! That's a winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!